Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Alan Levy Show at blogtalkradio.com. Be prepared to call in now and chat with Alan and his very special guest right here at blogtalkradio.com. With no more further ado, please welcome your host, Mr. Alan Levy.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Alan Levy Show. It's a pleasure to be here. It's been a while since I've been back on air, but I'm really happy to be here today. And Hillary, my co-host, our famous co-host, how are you, Hillary, is with us.
How famous am I, Alan?
Well, in my eyes, you're very famous. and all of the hosts, by the way, on Blog Talk Radio, Hillary is our features editor. So all of you that are looking for your shows to be promoted and featured on our homepage, you are the apple of their eyes.
Yes, I vary in their eyes, but yes. But it's good to be with you again, and it has been a while, but we're here with some special guests today.
Yes, we're very excited. We have a great show. You can find the show at blogtalkradio.com /Alan Levy. The live show, of course, is on now. You can join us if you like with a question during the show. You can dial 347-677-0649. The archive of the show will appear on the same URL, which is blogtalkradio.com/Alan Levy. You can also subscribe to our shows. So we suggest you do, whether you listen live or you listen archived. This is a very important topic that we're covering today. So today we welcome Andy Scull and Brian Sheedle, the co-founders of an organization, HOPE, which stands for Helping Other People Everywhere. HOPE can be found at hopeartist.org. HOPE is dedicated to bringing awareness to the horrifying situation in Darfur. Brian, a former Marine, has spent significant time in Darfur, and his story can be seen in the movie The Devil Came on Horseback, a 2007 Sundance winner, which you can find on Netflix, recently aired on National Geographic. Andy and Brian, how are you today?
Doing well, thank you.
Great.
Great. Well, thank you for joining Hillary and I on the Alan Levy Show. And as I mentioned before the show started, I first heard about The Devil Came on Horseback while I was listening to Michael Savage, an interview did Brian with him, talking about that. Do you recall that?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that was a good interview. And I left that saying, you know, it's a very powerful topic, and it's just something that it's a topic, and the issue surrounding Darfur is something that's very complex, which is really not being covered as much as we would think. So I wanted to take the opportunity to have you on and talk about it. So why don't we get right down to it and, you know, talk about, you know, the movie and your experience in Darfur. Certainly want to spend a lot of time in that. But I think it's important for you to talk about what's going on in Darfur and just explain it to everyone so we have a good kind of setting for this topic.
Sure. Well, I had spent 13 months in Sudan. The last six I spent in Darfur with the African Union as one of their unarmed military observers. Our job was to monitor a ceasefire between the government and the rebel groups. Of course, that ceasefire has never held, and they've signed several different ceasefires, even a peace treaty since that time. Basically, it's as you did mention, it is a complicated situation. The Sudanese government is working on pushing out the majority of the African populations, the black Africans, within Darfur. The entire population of Darfur is Muslim, so it is not a religious conflict. But the government has armed and trained Arab militias known as the Janjaweed, which terrorize these populations. They use rape as a tool of war. They burn these villages down to the ground and displace millions of people to date. The count right now is anywhere between 400,000 to 500,000 people that have been killed since the conflict started in 2003, and around 3 million people that have been displaced from their homes. And so it's a pretty tragic situation, and the international community has failed to do any concrete measures to stop the violence on the ground. The UN has passed more than 20 resolutions against Sudan, yet none of them have been enforced, and the peacekeeping troops that are deployed on the ground don't have the resources or the mandate to protect the civilian populations.
So why do you think, you know, none of these things are working? And I also know that China is, I had heard through your conversation with Savage, What's China's role in this?
Well, see, that's one of the problems. One of the reasons that you know, it's very hard to move forward is, you know, China is a permanent member of the Security Council and has veto power, and they buy around 80% of Sudan's oil. Out of that money that they provide back to the Sudanese government, which is their main source of revenue, they purchase, you know, 70% of that is used to purchase arms that are used in the war in Darfur. So it's just a perpetual situation of selling oil to China, which then in turn sells arms back to Sudan, which are used to kill civilian populations. And so it's a very difficult thing for the UN and the rest of the world to push through, as China says, well, we need this oil, and they're going to do whatever they can to get that oil. And so it becomes a very difficult, complicated situation.
Now, when did you first head over to Darfur? And you were a former Marine, is that correct?
Yes, I was a former Marine captain. I finished my obligation in 2003. In 2004, I headed to Sudan, and I was there until 2005. And since returning, you know, I've written a book, The Devil Came on Horseback, and, of course, the subject of a documentary film, and, you know, to try to raise awareness about this issue, and try to get individuals involved so that we can hopefully put an end to this, you know, the genocide of the 21st century.
Now, you had access, as you indicated, and I saw it on the website. Again, the website, what is the name of the website where people can get information and participate and either buy the book or the movie or contribute?
Hope Artist is the best website, HOPEARTIST.org. It's the best website. All the links are on there. All the information is on there to find out more information and figure out how individuals can become active in the situation.
So when you were deployed there, you had indicated that you had access to places where other people can't go. You know, you must have just stuck out like a sore thumb, right? I mean, I had interviewed Marcus Luttrell, who wrote the book The Lone Survivor. I don't know if you're familiar with that book. If you're familiar with that book, and he had been dropped down into Afghanistan. It was fascinating, and he was undercover as best he could be as a 6'5" Texan. In Afghanistan. I mean, how did you get around, and what are the types of things you saw on the ground, getting access to places that most people don't?
Well, as part of the African Union mission, I mean, when I was there at the time in South Darfur, obviously there weren't, you know, it was an African Union mission, and so everybody was African except for, you know, a few of us. And so, yes, I did stick out. But, you know, as an American, the local populations really greet you, and they're happy that we're there. They you know, I've become a spokesperson for all the Americans. And, you know, they look at us and say, well, great, you know, your country is here, you know, one of the greatest superpowers in the world. You're here, and now we're going to be saved. And so they had a tremendous amount of faith. But at the same time, there was nothing that any of us could do. You know, we would go out and we would investigate these complaints of ceasefire violations, and we would just take pictures and document what was happening. We would stand there as government troops in Janjaweed burned villages. We would go and see the aftermath of, you know, scores and scores of people that had been killed and burned alive, and you know, wounded children. And we would just write reports, and you know, hoping that something would happen about it. And until I realized that, you know, the African Union isn't stopping any of this, the international community doesn't know about it, and at that time I decided that I didn't want to be a part of the mission anymore and returned to the States and decided to release my photographs so that hopefully the world can, you know, learn a little bit more about the situation.
Right.
Was that a difficult decision for you to come to leave and come back? Tell me about what was going through your head at that time.
Well, I don't think it was a difficult decision to leave because I was extremely frustrated. I didn't really want to be a part of the mission. I figured that if I couldn't do anything that was good, I might as well just, you know, go home and you know, watch it on the news. So it was an easy decision for me to leave, although when I got home, I realized it wasn't on the news and nobody knew about it. And so the difficult decision came when I decided to release my photographs. You know, what kind of repercussions, you know, was I going to get from my former employer, from the African Union, from the Sudanese government, you know, from our government? What were all these different groups going to say about me releasing these photographs?
And what did they say?
Well, they weren't all too happy with me. The African Union, you know, threatened legal action against me. The Sudanese government has threatened to you know, extinct me if I ever return to Sudan.
Oh,
they said that if I ever go back, that I will never return home again. Our government was initially upset because they felt that that I would jeopardize other U.S. citizens on the ground or jeopardize their position within, you know, the African Union as a as an advisor, or even get their diplomats kicked out of Sudan because, you know, I was an official representative of the United States government. And so they were upset at first, but, you know, when it came around to it, you know, everybody has supported me in my decision to come out with them. And, you know, except obviously the Sudanese government and the African Union. And it's worked out for the best.
What about, you know, when you talk to the people there, and it's obviously a very distressing situation, people getting killed, millions displaced, are they wondering why no one is helping? That's the first question. And the other question I have is, I know while you're representing the U.S., but where are the Europeans in all this, or other Western civilizations that are should be standing up for freedom and are against genocide? Are they taking a position here, or they feel this is, you know, something the U.S. should be dealing with?
Well, let me answer that part first. The European Union and other European communities are very supportive of, you know, what's trying to happen there. I don't think that any country in the world, to include the United States, has done enough to stop what's going on. I worked with citizens from all over the world that were there, and so everybody is trying to do what they can. Yet it really, the weight lies upon the permanent members of the Security Council to make the UN effective. And so it's up to us to convince China, who is, you know, one of the biggest trade partners with China, to actually, you know, get on our side and have some strong rhetoric, which they have had recently with the increased pressure, you know, around the Olympics. The people on the ground, you know, they are happy to have any help. If they are so grateful, it's amazing. You know, we ask them what they want and what do they want to tell the American population, and all they say is thank you. Thank you for everything. Thank you for, you know, providing tents through the UN and providing us food and all this, even though that their whole village is destroyed and their family's been killed. They're extremely grateful for anything they get. Some of them are becoming increasingly frustrated with, you know, the inability of the world to stop this thing from happening, because we should be able to stop it. It's been 5 years now, and the world should have stood up and stopped it already.
Why don't we talk a little about hope and, you know, and Andy, and how people can get involved in this cause, and, you know, and talk a little more. And you talked briefly about, you know, where you're working in other areas as well, but why don't we talk a little about that and what other people are supporting a hopeartist.org?
Okay. Well, when I first met Brian and saw the film and read his book, I knew that there was a whole community of people that I was a part of that are artists and creatives that could be really helpful. You know, some of the actions that Brian took in his film that really motivated people showed, you know, different ways that they could create rallies or call 1-800-GENOCIDE or make a donation or write letters to their congressman. And I just felt like there was more that could be done, because obviously there still wasn't a big enough response to have something change. So as an artist and creative myself, I came up with the idea of the Hope Campaign that would involve that community to be very active in contributions that were different than phone calls, check writing, or letters to congressmen. So what we created was a campaign that involved artists of all kinds, graphic designers, photographers, videographers, in a campaign that could really show their contributions to the masses, to involve young people in a participatory way. So that ended up showing a lot of results. Surprisingly, the interest from young people to be able to be involved once they became educated on the situation in Darfur was enormous, actually. We simply thought of one of the thousands of photos that Brian had took in Darfur, which he had already released to the New York Times and, you know, had already been used in a documentary film and portions not only in his book but in other books, had been featured on Oprah, and took it to another level. So we presented that one photograph to a well-known artist who's been very involved in different philanthropic causes over the years. His name is Shepard Fairey. And his involvement showed a great response. He took the same photo that Brian captured in Darfur of a young girl and her brother in a refugee camp in Chad, and he created a poster out of it, which then was translated into a shirt, which then saw the response from the retail community. I mean, this shirt was picked up by thousands of Americans through different retail outlets that showed that they were aware of what was going on and wanted to somehow share their opinion and voice about it by buying a shirt, but then by wearing this shirt. And that's just expanded into various different ways that artistic talents can contribute to this issue in particular, but to issues around the world. That it just it doesn't just take rallies and letter writing to help make a difference. So that's where the Hope Campaign was born.
Wow, how did you get Shepard Fairey on board? Did you know him, or what was your contact with him like when you first explained the mission of the group to him?
Well, I actually put together a meeting of various creative directors, producers, art directors that I knew just through my background of working in advertising and through films, and got everyone's response from watching the documentary about Brian and all the efforts that he put forward along with his sister, along with Jane Wells, along with several other individuals that had been working on this issue for 2 to 3 years at that point. So once that community of about, it was just 40 to 50 people that I knew were people that could make decisions within the media and advertising, everyone felt the same, that this community of creatives had an ability to reach out and touch others. So at that point, Shepard had been contacted by another art director, creative director, duo friend of mine. And so him and his wife came to this special screening that we did. And from there, we just all started collaborating. And at that point, you know, we had already reached out to a few different media publications, Spin Magazine, Trace Magazine, and then Swindle Magazine offered up free placements of ads that then Shepard also designed from Brian's photo and then from statistical information that Gretchen, Brian's sister from Global Grassroots, provided along with myself. And that's how it all started.
Wow. It seems like they're really, these magazines and organizations really understood the importance of it and jumped on it, so that's really exciting. You know, it's not hard to convince people this is actually something that needs attention, you know, so that's great. It seems like it grew organically too.
Yeah, absolutely, and it continues to be doing that. I mean, we get all kinds of emails, phone calls, responses from, you know, young people, different products, retail outlets, media that see the power and interest from young talent and creatives to participate and be involved, and that this type of area can, you know, help push something to the next level of attention that it needs.
Yeah, definitely.
Are you seeing, I mean, this conflict's been going on for such a long time, and Brian, I mean, is the pace of this genocide subsiding, accelerating? Is it going, you know, what's happening there now? I mean,
well, there's still conflict going on. The government of Sudan is now supporting rebel groups with inside of Chad to attempt to throw overthrow the Chadian government. And just 3 days ago, the Sudanese government actually attacked a town inside of Chad. They crossed the border with helicopters and army troops and attacked a town there. So basically, Chad and Sudan are fighting a war against each other through these different proxy rebel groups. Chad supporting the rebel groups in Darfur, and Sudan supporting the rebel groups in Chad. It has the potential to blow up into a huge regional conflict as these refugees flood into the Central African Republic, into Congo, further down into the South Sudan. The Sudanese government's disregard for the comprehensive peace agreement signed between the North and the South government, which was signed in 2003, ending a 20-year civil war between those two sides, in the attacking and the leveling of a massive city in the Abyei province of around 150,000 people. That happened a month ago. And so the Sudanese government is continuing because they realize that the international community isn't going to do anything to stop it. And really what we need to do is we need to continue to put pressure on China, not, by protesting the Olympics or, boycotting them or boycotting China's goods or anything like that, but in involving them, in telling them that they're, a very valuable partner in the world, and that they should use their economic status around the world to do good instead of just, suck the oil out of Sudan and not really care what the Sudanese government does. They're in a very powerful position, and I think that we need to continue to work with them. The conflict, some say, because of the involvement of activist groups and because of the pressure on the UN and African Union and, through countries all around the world, that the conflict has been able to be slowed. They said that most likely by the end of 2005, going into 2006, that the Sudanese government would have completed their mission of kicking out the majority of the black African populations. But because of the international community, because now people are aware of Darfur, now people are aware of Sudan, or at least a portion of people are, that has slowed the Sudanese government. So hopefully, we can continue to raise awareness, we can put pressure on China, using the Olympics as a platform, telling them that, they're hosting this international games of celebration between communities around the world, showing we can all get together and compete on a single court, on a single track, on a single field, and that's the way they need to act around the world. And so hopefully that's what we can do.
Mm-hmm. I have a question maybe for both of you. What role does this election play? Because I've read that both of the candidates said they're going to, of course, stand up and try to end this and try to do what they can. But what do you really think that these new presidents can do if they come in ready to handle this?
Well, I think, first of all, I personally don't feel that I've heard enough out of any of the candidates about this issue. I would like to hear a lot more about it. But the one thing we have to remember here in a democratic society is that these elected officials, whether they're senators or congressmen or presidents, that they serve the public. And that if the public's talking about, issue A, B, and C, then that's what they're going to talk about. And so that's one of the aims, the goals of HOPE, is to put these types of issues on the forefront of the media, of the public, so that it's on the tip of their tongue, so they talk about Darfur, so they talk about the violence, the post-election violence that happened in Kenya. So they talk about the Rwandan genocide and rebuilding of that country 14 years, their genocide happened 14 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so by putting these things out there in the public, hopefully people will talk about it, and therefore the candidates will begin to talk about it, and that our elected officials will begin to talk about it, and so we'll actually be able to get something done. Because, I mean, I don't have a vote at the United Nations. If I do, I know what I'd say, but that's up to the American population and the populations around the world to convince our lawmakers to speak about these issues.
Have you been successful reaching out to people like George Clooney, who's taken on this as, or at least purports to have taken this on as a cause? It would have been great if we can get him on one of these shows to talk about Darfur and what his views are on it. But the celebrities pull a lot of weight and visibility, as you know. I mean, you know, Andy, you've been in, I guess you've been in the entertainment field. What's happening there? Have they kind of leveled off their engagement to this, or do you feel that they are doing enough?
I think that they're doing what they can. Obviously, they're extremely busy people, and I couldn't imagine being George Clooney and getting requested probably 10, 15 times a day to jump on certain individuals' causes. So they get pulled in many different directions, and I applaud every single one of them for standing up for it. Mia Farrow, who's a friend, and she's very outspoken about this. George Clooney, Don Cheadle, they've all been involved with this issue. And they're very strategic in what they do and how they do it. They want to make sure that their involvement doesn't take away from what's actually at hand. You know, if you did a fundraiser with George Clooney, are people coming to the fundraiser to see George Clooney? Are they coming there because they actually care about the issue? And so they understand that, and they want to make sure that their involvement is used in the most strategic way so that they can make the biggest difference. I mean, George Clooney's addressed the United Nations with his father, Nick Clooney, both great people. And hopefully, we can get more people involved that, when George Clooney speaks about it, everybody listens. And I applaud him for what he's done, because most of the people in the United States or throughout the world wouldn't know about this issue if it wasn't for people like him standing up.
Right.
Yeah, and I would add that a point that Brian has made since he started speaking out about this issue for several years now, as he's gone to churches and synagogues and universities and people ask how they can be involved, a point that Brian has made is for people to just do what they do. And that has been part of the concept of Hope Artists and the Hope campaign as well, to just empower people to realize that every bit of who they are and what they do adds to showing those that represent us in a democracy that this is something that we care about. So as different celebrities or actors do what they do, it's just as important for everyone else to do the same. If we put that type of pressure on just individuals that we think have more power than they actually do, then we'll fail to make an impact in showing that these are issues that our population cares about.
Mm-hmm. Right. Chad, who's backing Chad? I mean, the government of Chad. Is there another country that's supporting Chad, or
the French government have a pretty good interest in Chad, and as well as we do from a counterterrorism perspective. But really, they're one of the poorest countries in the world, and they don't have too many resources to fight off the Sudanese government. The European Union agreed to deploy troops along the border. I think the number was around 3,500 to 7,000 troops that they were going to deploy along the border, and they're in the process of doing that. But it's a slow process of getting all the troops in there. When Andy and I were in Sweden late last year, promoting the Hope campaign and doing a screening of the film there, we had the opportunity to meet with a number of Swedish military personnel that were going to be deployed to Chad, and so that was a great thing to be able to contribute, as just spreading the awareness even further to individuals that are actually going to be on the ground, hopefully protecting civilians.
Are there other large groups? Which are some of the more noted or popular groups that are supporting this initiative and creating awareness to Chad, to what's going on in Darfur?
Well, I mean, there's numerous organizations. All anybody has to do is just put Darfur in your search engine, and you'll pull up half a dozen of them. I mean, there are different religious groups that are raising money for refugee camps. There's awareness raising groups that are out there trying to promote the cause through awareness. Most of the links to all the information, if you go to Hope Artists, we have a lot of information on there. Other groups that we work with. So I recommend people go there and just, learn a little bit more. You can learn about, the film. You can learn about groups that are, lobbying Congress and individuals that are speaking, at the UN Security Council.
Right. So, again, just to wrap up the numbers here, again, just to highlight it, because they're daunting. You've claimed, and it's obviously it's out there for the public domain, 450,000 to 400,000 to 500,000 dead, and 2.5 million to 3 million displaced. And then there was another number that I had seen on the site, 3.5 million food aid. Incredible numbers here.
Yeah. I agree.
Well, I want to thank you both for joining us today on Blog Talk Radio. It's a pleasure. If you're looking for ways to communicate your messages, please feel free to sign up here in Blog Talk Radio, and Hillary's a features editor, so we'll feature your content. I think it's a very important topic. So once again, Andy and Brian, it's a pleasure. It's hopeartist.org, and the movie is Devil Came on Horseback. You can get it on DVD and on Netflix.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Take care.
Hillary, I wanted to, it was very important to have this issue be discussed, and I hope we can cover more of these types of issues on the network.
I totally agree, and one of the final things I couldn't help but wonder is, why wasn't this getting the media attention that it needed, until people started having bumper stickers and starting these organizations themselves. I mean, the mainstream media really didn't have a lot to do with the awareness. And so as a smaller media outlet, an independent one, we can try to raise awareness on these issues.
Definitely. And again, with the content that's here on Blog Talk Radio is available on our listeners on MySpace, on iTunes, the younger demographic. And what I think the web is doing, it's making it easier for the youth to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I wonder how the youth are, how young people are getting information. And, it's just so much easier now to consume it, to get information than it was, 5, 8, 10 years ago.
And it's instantaneous. I mean, if you have the will and the drive to find out more, you can. So that's a good part about it. But I really admire those two, and I'm glad that we got to chat with them.
Yeah, very much. So what's going on for tonight? A few more things we can let people know.
Well, one very exciting thing is Corey Feldman, the actor who was in The Lost Boys and Goonies and a lot of other shows, movies back in the 80s, and now he has a new show called The Two Coreys, and he's also going to be in a new movie. So he's going to talk about those things tonight with Eric Olson, and it's on the homepage. It's going to be on Gloss Lip Radio with Don and Eric. So that should be pretty fun.
Yes, and we had James Woolsey. We should have asked him about that.
Woolsey.
He's a former CIA, a director of the CIA. He was on this afternoon.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
You could find him on Atlas Shrugs, a show on Blog Talk Radio. So we could actually have had him to talk about Darfur as well. I'm sure he is.
I'm sure he'd give us a lot of info on that.
As the former head of the CIA. So anyway, thanks everyone for joining. It was a great show today. Once again, thanks to Andy and Brian at hopeartist.org. And Hillary, have a great day. Thank you all.
You too. Bye, Alan.
Get the ending bumper?
Ending bumper, we will end. I will press. Have a good day. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thanks for joining Alan and Hillary on The Alan Levy Show. Make sure to join the conversation by calling 347-677-0649 and listen to The Alan Levy Show on Blog Talk Radio.